Hello and welcome to The Agenda. I'm Christopher Gallagher on this, the 19th of October 2020. We're recording on Monday. It's 11:34 and we're still angry. We are still, well, I certainly am. I'll get the views of the OG panel, starting with, well, let's just introduce first. Hello, Stuart Dugan. How are you, sir?
Cheer up, mate. I've been talking about this for days now. It's fucking miserable, and it's only going to get worse if we keep being angry and miserable about it.
Yep.
I still feel shite as well. I'm just trying to...
Try to lighten the mood there.
The tears of a clown. The tears of a clown.
Love it. We're also joined live from Edinburgh. It's Kieran Devlin. Hi, Kieran.
Hi, Chris. Last week, I was workshopping that I do like a bit where I'd come on and I'd do like an Edinburgh accent and be well funny, but I feel too shite to do that, to be honest. I'm not feeling in the place to do a comedy, a gag at the moment.
So you, instead of doing the Edinburgh accent, you're doing like the wee wanky Glasgow West End accent?
Ah, very good.
Come on.
Very good.
Bit of fun. Bit of fun to cheese up.
We need to laugh. Laughter is the best medicine.
That's the one I'll be using as well.
Yeah, well, you always use it, you fucking tit, but there you go. Nah, I'm only joking. Look, here, we are, joking aside, we are where we really didn't want to be. We wanted to have a whole celebration of Celtic being back on top, which clearly hasn't happened. We'll talk about the game. We'll talk about the news. We'll talk about what's coming up for the week. But joking aside, Kieran, you have just moved to Edinburgh. How was the move? How was the flitting? Are you okay? Is everything sorted?
Yeah, we still need to get internet. So currently at hotspotting off my phone, so looking forward to that. that data being run out. But yeah, it was all good in general. Bit of a nightmare trying to get like IKEA Billy bookcases up three sets of tenement stairs. Yeah, so that was, I couldn't really run or walk for about a week. So that was good. But the whole thing, yeah, it's pretty good. Nice wee area. Obviously the worst city and everything. And I'm a Judas, I'm a traitor scumbag, and I accept that with good grace. So yeah, that's all the cracks so far.
Yeah, sorry, I just had a flashback to listen to Taylor Swift on Saturday there. Stuart, how are you? Well, how's things? What's happening?
Yeah, it's fine. I saw Chris Iyer yesterday and I got really angry just seeing him. I was like, I hate you, even though you were actually quite good. because when I actually think about it, I've been obviously really down since Saturday, and often if I get down, I try and have a bit of perspective about what it is that's bothering me, and then hopefully see if I can then remedy that in some way, whether, you know, maybe I just need to get out, maybe I need to see someone, maybe I need to do a bit of exercise, maybe I need to eat a nice healthy meal. What is it that's making me feel bad? And actually, I'm in quite a privileged position at the moment where everything's actually going pretty well, like with Celtic's capitulation, but that is the thing that's bothering me most, and it's hanging over me now, and it's
like
that
a,
sad.
Like a dark cloud grey area?
Like a dark cloud grey. A dark cloud is a grey area, as they say.
Yeah.
As I say.
Available now on YouTube.
Yeah, available now on YouTube. People are still watching it. That's nice. People are still sending me nice messages. That's nice as well. I'm going to be on the news this week as well, I believe. I think that's happening this week. Ooh. I was interviewed a couple of weeks ago, and I think that's coming out this week.
What channel is you?
STV. I think it's STV News at 6. Don't know what day. Who knows?
You're just going to have to watch the STV News every single day.
You know, I presume I'll be notified slightly closer to the time.
And is this for the quota, or is it just for general?
I'm planning a murder, Kieran.
So. Yeah, you're going to be... Is it just because you're such a good waiter that you should know, yeah, as an example.
It's regarding how musicians and creatives have dealt with the pandemic, and it's me talking a little bit about that and talking a bit about my film, and hopefully showing some footage from it, and hopefully people will be like, that sounds really interesting, I'll go and watch that.
Buy your stuff at Bandcamp.
Yes,
absolutely, Kieran, at thequilter.bandcamp.com. Amen.
Kieran, we call them servers, not waiters, so...
Apologies.
I don't like.
I've been in Edinburgh a week, and this is what's happening.
I know. I don't like either of those terms, if I'm honest with you guys. I would prefer the most respectful terminology, I suppose, you could use would be front of house. Front of house. Vague, but respectful.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Well, that's what we're all about. Right. You know, when you do so, I'll tell you a little bit about my routine on a Monday. You know, let's see how the I'll let you into a little bit of background of how the sausage is made, as Stuart would say. I usually get up nice and early and I create a rundown, and the rundown is based on what's happening, what's coming up, and you know, we'll go into maybe a couple of features and we'll look at, you know, lots of different things. You'll listen to the agenda, you know the gist of that. Today,
the rundown's very vague this morning, not a lot of heart in it.
It's very vague. I've got clips, we've got some clips of Neil Lennon's post-match press conference, which we'll touch on, but it's just very much a case of I'm really scunnered, like really, really like scunnered. And it's not even about the result, you know, and this is got the opening question for today is, where does this defeat rank for you? I'll give a quick kind of thought. The defeat itself, actually losing to Rangers, is awful. There's absolutely no question. It's the worst thing that can happen to us in football, I think. However, there are, you know, there are ways in which you lose. Do you know what I mean? Like when we used to lose, when Tommy Burns was the manager, for example, we lost because of a little bit of naivety, but we always played attacking football and we always get caught with a snidey counter-attack. And it's not that I can live with that, but I can understand that. When the Martin O'Neill team lost, it's because they were up against, you know, doped up, financially doped up, you know, World Cup semi-finalists. And that's, it's not acceptable, but it's understandable. What's really frustrating me is not that, it's not the loss, it's the manner. And it's really, really, it's really unraveled a lot of things for me in terms of this season and going for 10 in a row. But let's get you guys' thoughts. We'll start with Kieran Devlin, because we've not heard from you, Kieran. Thoughts on just that game and where does this rank for you?
I think the big thing for me, and you guys touched on, I haven't listened to the aftermath yet. I just tried to stay away from anything yesterday. Yep. But I listened to the reaction, and yourself and Barry and Alan was talking about it. And the word you used, and I think it was pretty spot on, was toothless. Like, I was looking at the stats today, and a lot on the face of it, Celtic weren't awful on the stats. And obviously, that tells you that there's some limitations to stats. But it was, there was one that stood out for me, is that Celtic only had two key passes all game. They dominated possession, they dominated the passing numbers in terms of like completed passes, passes forward, all that stuff. But they only had two key passes all game. And I think that tells you a lot about just how they were just aimless. There was just no impetus. There was no purpose to anything. There was no patterns. It was really quite terrible. And when I woke up this morning, I was thinking about it, trying to remove the motion of how bleak Saturday was. Was it definitely the worst performance of the season? And I'm not even sure it was. Just looking back to Kilmarnock and St Johnstone 2 weeks ago, I think the performance was just as bad then. We were just weren't as good a team. And I think it's just this pattern we're seeing over this season. And as you say, like looking at the season overall, it's really quite worrying that this isn't, it's not getting addressed. And obviously, you have to take into account how many people were missing. We're going to get onto that. You have to take into account the COVID stuff and how that's unsettled everyone. But when you look at, like, I'd say everyone bar Klamala was in contention to start that game with everyone fully fit.
Welsh.
Welsh and Julian. Yeah, Welsh and Klamala. So that's two out of the 11. Obviously, it's not ideal having the two of them there, but you did expect them to compete a lot better than they have. Yeah, I just feel in the long, I can't really remember how bleak it was after the last year's Celtic Park win. Sort of lost the, you know, 10 months ago in the 29th. I just remember feeling really, really low at that one because it didn't seem problems were being addressed. And again, it seems like problems aren't being addressed. And I think what's the bleakest feeling about it is that I don't know how Celtic recover from this. And I don't know where the idea, like what brilliant idea is going to be found in these current circumstances to win at Ibrox in what, 2 months? Like it's really not far away. And I just don't know how they're going to sort things and both be on form in general and have like a really well-developed game plan to take advantage of Rangers' weaknesses, nullify their strengths, and just beat them at their own game. Because that's 4 from 5 of the last derbies now where Celtic have been comfortably outplayed. And it's been comfortable. As you say, Gal, like it's not been like Celtic have been had the better chances and just been unfortunate. They have been soundly beaten in 4 of the last derbies. Well, they're not beaten because there was obviously the League Cup final. They've been soundly outplayed in 4 of the last 5 derbies. It's just really worrying. And I'm not to get too pessimistic. I don't know how, unless something just magically clicks. And these things happen in football that, you know, maybe Edward and Christie and all the big players, all the key players, suddenly magically find some form and then we can build. Or suddenly Lennon manages to find like a nugget of motivation and he manages to re-energise these players, to challenge them again, to encourage them and get them going. But on the face of it, I'm really struggling to see how it happens.
Stuart, what's your kind of take on that?
My big worry is not kind of where it's at now. It's just, as Kieran says, that I'm just not really sure how to fix it. And I'm not really sure that I don't trust Neil Lennon to fix it. My main hope or my main thought is that it's a result. Coming back to your original question about how it ranks in terms of like a result, it's not the worst result, not even close. But as far as performance, it's one of the very, very worst because it was gutless. It was toothless. They just accepted it from about 55 minutes. They just accepted it. And there was players that were hiding, players that didn't want the ball, players that didn't really want to be there. Nobody was really accountable. Least of all Lennon. And I can only hope that it's such a bad performance and there's now so much noise around the club that just from a perspective of personal pride and professional pride, that the players, if they're not being motivated by their manager or by the coaching staff, have to perhaps take matters into their own hands and they have to hold each other accountable and themselves accountable too. Now, I'm not suggesting it's the players' fault because I completely agree that Celtic currently and have done for most of this season played without any real purpose or system or anything like that. I talked about it on the aftermath about how it's like we play without a midfield, as if the players are scared to hold the ball in the middle of the pitch or try and just keep possession there. There's no tangible plan of we're going to play against a team that are set up in this way, so to counter that we will play this way. And I shared an article in the WhatsApp group this morning with comments from Callum McGregor where he even acknowledged that they're sort of somewhat stuck between systems when it comes to an approach to these games in particular. And I don't know where that spark is going to come from. I don't think that Rangers are going to go through the season winning every game. I think they're going to drop points because I think that for all that they were the better team, comfortably the better team on Saturday, they still didn't create an enormous amount of chances, and I think that they will struggle to create chances against more stubborn, kind of turgid teams, certainly away from home. But I also just cannot see a situation where Celtic outplay them or outmuscle them or outfight them because they just seem, when people talk about a gap closing, the gap is the other way now. And regarding that, after the 29th, that was a real scunner and it was a real low point because I think a lot of people had to acknowledge that perhaps 9 in a row was going to be a real challenge and that you know, mathematically we were behind, they had a game in hand. Well, mathematically we were ahead, but they had a game in hand, so we were technically behind. And we didn't know quite how it was all going to play out. But I said this on the aftermath as well, that I don't know how you can argue that Celtic are the best team in Scotland just now. They're simply not. The way they've been playing, the results, the performances, they're not the best team in Scotland. They have no right to go and win the league just now. And so they have to find that. And they have to not play with this entitlement that because they've won 9 titles in a row, that suddenly justifies them winning 10. I think it's a real, real challenge. It's only a point on paper if we win our game in hand. But how do you fix it? How do you combat it? Because it's not just a case of we'll play with 3 different midfielders or we'll do this. There has to be a different approach. We cannot just keep passing the ball out to Duffy, passing it to Ayer, passing it to Duffy, passing it to Ayer, passing it to Duffy, and then playing a long diagonal ball. It's absolutely gutless, pathetic.
Yeah. We're going to move on in a second, but I'm just going to ask the question. Look, if we win our game in hand, we'll be a point behind. the manager has won the last two titles. I know he's not what he didn't win, obviously, Rodgers, but he really took the title home for the eighth, and he won the ninth. And this might sound mental. This might sound like a really stupid thing, but I think it's a question that we really need to ask. Would replacing Lennon fix this, Kieran?
Maybe. It's obviously a massive risk. There's no guarantee it will. But you could also argue it's a massive risk keeping Lennon at this stage, just because when we got Lennon permanently, we knew three things. We knew he wasn't a training ground coach. We knew he wasn't a tactician. But we knew he was a motivator. That was his thing. He's a man manager. He's good at encouraging players, getting emotional buy-in, challenging them as well. Like, he's very good at getting, you know, especially in the second half of last season, Edwards and Cham and Griffiths, he really challenged them to get onto a game, and they played their best football in Celtic colours, arguably. These players don't really look motivated at that moment. And that's obviously not entirely all Lennon's responsibility. These players have to take some responsibility themselves to try and motivate themselves, to probably get themselves psyched up for it. But when it's the entire team that look really disinterested every week, twice a week, then there's something wrong going on there. And if that motivational aspect isn't there, and there's also not the coaching, the player development, the tactics side of things, what's left?
I mean, Stu, like, it's very, very, very unlikely that it would happen, because I think, you know, as I mentioned, if you just look at it, we're a point behind if we win our game in hand. But I think there's a growing disharmony amongst the support. There's huge blind faith supporters who will say, how can you sack him at this point in time? Which actually, do you know what, isn't the worst argument. I mean, I get it, you know, but this isn't one game in isolation. This is the season. We've papered over the cracks with some results, and I know that we've said results are all that matter, and I genuinely do think that. However, my fear, and I don't know how you feel, is that the wheels could come off now.
Yeah, possibly. I think that in the immediate short term, then it's about as crucial a 7 days as Neil Lennon is likely to have in any of his tenures at Celtic, because I think that if it's perfectly feasible that we could get turned over on Thursday night by AC Milan, and then the mounting pressure that then goes into a game at Todders, Pittodrie.
Love it.
You like it?
I'm on board.
That's a Barry Gallagher. Credit to Barry Gallagher, and I love it. If the pressure that puts, if you don't go, I know that Celtic perform well at Todders in general, but it's hard when I'm trying to make a serious point when I'm making a joke about Pittodrie. In general, we do perform well, but it's a difficult place to go. It's a difficult game, difficult tie. And if Celtic drop points, if we draw, as we've looked like we're desperate to almost every time we've played away from home this season, I think that we'll be sitting here talking about Lennon being gone or being going next week if it's that bad. So it's a difficult run of games to have to, you know, tackle under such pressure. And I know that people might say the siege mentality, but there was fucking no siege mentality to be found on Saturday. And I hope more than anything that he can turn it around. I like Lennon. I want Lennon to do well. I want Celtic to do well. I would take no pleasure in having to see Neil Lennon leave the club. But the only way in which he will leave the club is if things get worse. So I don't want to see that happen. No. I want to see Celtic kick on and bounce back. And where that spark comes from, I imagine there's a very honest assessment going on. I hope there's a very honest assessment going on at Lennox Town today among the players, amongst the coaching staff. When you talk about how the problem must be deeper than an individual's motivation if so many players aren't motivated, I would agree with that. What I would say is that if you're looking for a spark, there have been a couple of individuals who have looked like they have the bit between their teeth, or at least that they have a bit of fight in them. They want the ball. Callum McGregor on Saturday, I was talking about this morning. Callum McGregor was not really at his best on Saturday. He was a lot of sloppy passing. But he wanted to get on the ball and he wanted to try things. He wanted to try and make things happen. For all his faults and for all that, you know, he's still not really match fit. Every time Lee Griffiths is, I say every time, he's played twice. On both occasions, though, he's come on with an energy and a desire and a hunger to kind of try and get things going. I would probably put Turnbull in that category as well, where he's looked really bright and lively and wants to make an impact. And then I'm not suggesting for a second that you make him a regular starter, but looking at Stephen Welsh's reaction to the performance, the result, everything when he's sitting in the stands, players that really are affected by this and really care and really want to not be this way, I think those are the sorts of individuals that you have to flood your team with right now. When everyone else, when there's a malaise and you need a spark from somewhere, a player like Ryan Christie as well, for everyone that's annoyed about Ryan Christie, oh, he takes 10 shots. How fucking nice would it have been to see anyone take a shot on Saturday, you know? So having someone with that energy, that kind of infectious running, that's the sort of thing that we need. That's the sort of thing that can maybe get players out of their funk. That's the sort of thing that can maybe get Edward a couple of goals and back to full confidence and full fitness. Although from what we're hearing, you know, we might not even see him for a couple of weeks yet. So
yeah,
it's worrying.
Right. Okay. Do you know what? We're going to come back to this, obviously, but I just want to, let's, you know, do the agenda for the week. So Celtic are playing AC Milan, who are top of Serie A, on Thursday, 8 PM. We then obviously go to Todders, at Midders on Sunders.
No, you've gone to.
I've ruined it, haven't I? I've made the conversation error. No, we go to Pittodrie on Sunday at 12 o'clock. So two massive games.
And it's Thursday's away, isn't it?
No, I think Thursday's at home.
Yeah, Celtic Park.
Celtic Park.
Is it? Okay, that's good. Because I was thinking about the travel implications there.
Yeah, bye. So that is good. The fact that we are at our own base, if you will, and so
yeah, we'll get horsed and everyone will be tucked up in bed by 11 o'clock to watch the highlights.
So what's on the Cynic this week? Well, tomorrow we've got the Cynic Weekly dropping as always, available on all channels. We're going to leave peak football this week just because, as Graham said on Twitter, a lot of peak football is based on laughing at Rangers and
cowards. Absolute cowardice.
It was,
you've got to, whatever happens, mate. I was always told, whatever happens, you've got to show up to work on Monday morning. You know, if your team gets turned over, you've got to show up. So if you make a satirical news show, you've got to find a way to make it work.
He was showing me some of the material he had, and it was I made the decision. It's an editorial decision from me.
Incidentally, on that, I'm one of the biggest disappointments of my weekend is that a host of Rangers accounts didn't follow me when they were following the boys to have a laugh at all our content. So
I think I blocked from the Cynic account. I literally blocked about over 100.
Really?
So what they were doing, and do you know what? See, to be fair, I thought it was quite funny. The team talk, we put a clip of the team talk and it was just them retweeting it saying ha 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 ha, and I thought, aye, fair play. I mean, literally, yeah, well,
do you know what? See, a lot of the anger that's based on that, ultimately, as you say, fair enough. See, if the shoe was on the other foot, which it has been for a long, long time, it's tremendous. It's the best thing ever. And Celtic were so bad that you almost can't even begrudge them doing that.
Yeah,
that's how bad we were.
Yeah,
and that's just another layer of the anger and disappointment that they've allowed us to be in that position. How dare Chris Iyer be out having a nice Sunday when he's ruined my weekend?
Just so everyone knows, Stuart was raging about that yesterday.
I know, later on. Chris Iyer's probably a really nice guy. Yeah. I don't know. He had a coffee and he was out outside. I was raging.
I don't think he should be outside the day after.
He should be inside.
I think he should be
taking
out
his lashes.
Jesus, in the public sphere. Wednesday, we've got the Deep Dive crew will give their thoughts on the derby. Claire and the panel will be giving their thoughts. That should be great. We'll also do a preview of AC Milan on Wednesday as well. No one's looking forward to that, I'll be honest. I mean, it is only Monday, so hopefully it'll brighten up. But yeah, Thursday, there's going to be a team talk for AC Milan as well of what they're going to do is. Thursday, there'll also be a reaction to the Milan game, which is you and Boat.
Vultures come up and finally reap what I've sowed.
You're reaping what you've sowed. Lunch Club's on Friday this week. Lunch Club will more than likely be on Friday moving forward, because obviously if we're recording on Thursday and we've got other content out there. So Lunch Club will be on Friday, looking probably more of a reaction, or, you know, the day after the big games from a European perspective. So that's good. Then on Saturday, we've got a preview for the Aberdeen game. And then on Sunday, we've got a reaction as well.
Sunday night, there's a transfer committee emergency looking for a new manager.
Hosted by you, the Vulture.
So guys, I think Gordon Strachan is the man for the job, like, honestly.
Don't.
Would you take, if Lennon goes, what everyone wants Lennon out, but what if Gordon Strachan comes in?
Lennon in, that's what I say. I say Lennon in. Fucking hell. I really, really, really dislike Gordon Strachan.
I know.
Like, if Strachan became the manager of Celtic, Jesus. That's not happening, though. There's absolutely not a chance that happens. Right, let's hit on some news before we get back to the derby and the week ahead. Your colleague, Kieran Devlin, had an article today on The Athletic about Edouard. He was mentioned within the article. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, it was just like his weekly news roundup where he gets some like wee details and everything. And he was just saying that basically there was a lot of interest in Edouard over the summer. Like, there was a lot of clubs made inquiries about him, including in England, you know, all the clubs that we thought of, including like Crystal Palace, Aston Villa, etc. But only one club made an official bid, which was an unnamed German club, which I think is quite interesting. I'm going to try this week to try and find out if I could possibly find out which club it was.
Does it rhyme with Schmeier and Schminick? I can't reveal my sources, but we'll say it was Bayern M. No, too much. Yeah. B Munich. It was a B Munich.
Mr. B Munich put in some money.
Yes, that'll do.
Yeah. It was definitely Schalke.
Think so.
Yeah, because of your man being the manager a bit. Oh, he's not anymore, but still. Anyway, sorry, Kieran.
But I mean, that's like the extent of it. I just think it's quite interesting that was only one bid from England. Bid. The German bid was well below Celtic's evaluation, which seems to tally with what I've heard is that a lot of the clubs in England were just put off by Celtic's valuation. Like, they were telling. I think they were telling clubs between 40 and 60 million, depending on the club.
Brilliant.
I think you can work out which English club they told 60 million to. to try and ward off.
I love the idea of Lawwell on the phone with like a wee guide saying, "Okay, Crystal Palace, English Premier League, shit team, 55 million. 55 million. Okay, sorry, let's go to the guide. Bayern Munich, yeah, German Bundesliga, yeah, just have a look here. Yeah, 61 million, actually, if you can believe it.
It's a bit more expensive for you, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yeah, we can do your deal, of course. Stay with me, I'll pass you over to one of my colleagues.
I'm not sure if I said it on here, but what Lawwell did with the Tierney deal. Like, Celtic had initially agreed 20 million for Tierney. And that was all set in stone until, what was his name, signed from Lille for Arsenal, Nicola Pepe. And when Lawwell saw it was 72 million, he threatened to pull the deal because Arsenal were going on about they don't have enough money to go beyond 20. So when he saw them paying 25 for Pepe, 75 for Pepe, he threatened to pull the Tierney deal and forcing Arsenal up to 24.6 or wherever it was in the end.
Hey, listen, that's why he gets paid the big bucks. That is interesting. There's a couple of stories, obviously, about him doing something similar and the deal just falling flat on its ass. So at least it's worked once, you know, Stu.
Those driveways won't heat themselves. On Edouard, I thought a little bit about this. Obviously, Odson Edouard hasn't been playing very well. But I think with what you're saying there, Kieran, it's you can understand why perhaps his head's been turned or he's been a bit unsettled, especially if there hasn't really been a concrete bid, especially if it's just what sounds like months of conjecture where it's players and teams that are interested, but they're not making a bid. Maybe he thinks, oh, we'd like to go there, but they've not made a bid and blah, blah, blah. So you can kind of understand that. But hypothetically, if Edward hadn't had COVID, if he'd just gone off for the international break and come back, say you put him in instead of Klamala, what do you think that does to the game on Saturday?
I'll go first. I think that we've got a far more cutting edge in the final third. I think that obviously changes the complexion of the game if he's fully fit. However, I'm not convinced that that means that we necessarily win. I think we were talking, me, you and Alan and Barry and Paul Carlin, Wink, were talking about the fact that within, Lennon doesn't really set up, he sets up one way and that's to win. There's no sort of nuance in terms of setting up not to get beat. And because we set up like that, you know, if you don't have those match winners on the pitch, those people who really are going to make a difference, then you're in trouble. And I think that's what we found out yesterday. Celtic could have set up a little bit differently and they could have been hard to break down. They could have been just, they are coming to our house. They should be coming to beat us. We shouldn't, I think you need to be a little bit, there needs to be a little bit of nuance in terms of how we approach things. This sort of catch as catch can sort of straight down the middle, we have to win every single game and that's it. I don't think that's the smartest system to or style to play. Sometimes it is okay to be like, okay, you're coming here, you come and beat us. Whereas we're always forcing the issue. And when you do that with Rangers, all they do is they sit back, they organise and they hit you in the counter. That's what we saw.
I think that, I'll come on to the Edward thing in the middle, but as a general point, I think that we show them too much respect. And I don't mean because they're not a good side, because they clearly are. And again, anyone that says that they're not really needs to sort of check themselves, because they're a very, man for man, Celtic have a better squad, but they're a very effective team. They're very good at what they do. They know what they're doing. You'll see it. I'm sure there'll be tactical breakdowns from us. You've seen it in the team talk and the build-up to this game, and you're seeing it in all any kind of half-baked analysis afterwards that they were very effective. But I do think that we showed them too much respect in terms of the physical side of the game, or in terms of, I know Alan and Samani have been talking about it a lot, some of the kind of gamesmanship things like getting in the ref's face, all these sorts of things. Celtic just seem a wee bit meek in comparison, and I think that that's maybe a little bit of sort of PTSD from some of the performances that they've been on the opposite end of the last few games. So psychologically, there's something that Celtic need to address there. Just on the point of Edward, I felt like of the many failings that there were on Saturday, the sort of recurring trope that we saw in the League Cup final when Edward wasn't there is just how difficult it is to make the ball stick in the final third.
Yeah,
there's very little occasion when we had any sort of worthwhile possession in the final third. The best game, the best chance of the game, which I know Lennon sort of hid behind it, which was pathetic, but Elianoussi's chance, fuck me, that was awful. I think Edward finishes that, all ends up.
Yeah.
And then you do have a slightly different game. I just think as well that Klamala, he gives you energy, but he's a little naive, and you're asking an enormous amount of a young boy with not very much experience in that game. So I do think it would give us something else. I don't think it would change the performance. I think it would have still been a turgid flat. It's certainly not going to stop their two goals, which was just utterly shambolic, pathetic defending. But Odson Edward as a match winner, you never know what he can contribute. Again, it would only paper the cracks of the bigger problems, but I just thought it was an interesting thought.
Kieran, what's your kind of take on that, if Edward plays?
I think quite similarly, like, we know Klamala's strengths and hold-up play isn't one of them. So, like, I think he really struggled on Saturday, but that's not his natural game. He was asked to do a job that he's not really suited to in terms of being that focal point in attack. That's not what he's there for. He's to, you know, to stretch defences, make runs in behind. And I know, like, obviously, Ayeti and Griffiths weren't fully through and Edward was out, but I do wonder, would have been better having Ayeti do 60 minutes or something. I don't know the full extent of Ayeti being out, but he's been training for 2 weeks. I just feel like, similar to you guys, I feel like there would have been better hold-up play. The ball might have been moving better into the final third, but at the same time, I think these issues are just deeper at the same time. Like, the, those problems of getting the ball from defence into the final third faster, those would still be there even if Edward was there. Like, the ball progression was still really slow, really plodding. I don't think that would have changed without Edward. So I think, yeah, I think it would have helped in some cases. And as you say, he might have scored, whether the El Yunusi chance or the Griffiths chance, which may have changed the game a bit. But, you know, if you're trying to take things over the 90 minutes, I just don't think it would have a massive impact. And it's the same thing like Christie as well. Like, Christie may have added a bit more energy. But these things are just... I think we look back at the two December games when we started with the midfield of McGregor, Christie and Brown, and they were just overrun. And we thought, right, we get Incham in there, Incham will sort it, and we'll be grand. And then we sort of had that on Saturday. And again, the midfield was, I think, for all Celtic were dreadful. I thought they weren't as overrun in the midfield as they were in the previous two games. I think there was bigger problems on the wings than in the middle, maybe.
I there's a couple of points I'd like to raise. The first point would be the fear I have with Lennon, Neil Lennon. I think the Klamala issue. So we all know that Klamala's better facing goal. He's not good with his back to goal. We all know that. You could tell that within 10 minutes. So why does he play that position? Why does Neil Lennon say, right, we're going to put you here? Is it a case of a striker playing in a striking position? Because the big fear I have is that he's not looking at these players and looking at their qualities and thinking, what can we get from you if we play you here? It's just a case of, you're a striker, so you play there, Stu.
Well, just a big point in that, and I actually don't feel like this has really been addressed enormously. It has been addressed in some criticism that I've seen on Twitter, but we've not really talked about it here. If we go back to the very, very most, before a ball's kicked, Lennon announces his team, and you've got Welsh, you've got Laxalt, and you've got Klamala, three players that perhaps you wouldn't have expected to see, and it's to serve the system, it's to serve the 3-5-2, and Lennon's clearly gone system over everything. Otherwise, you're not going to hand Stephen Welsh that responsibility. Now, if you look at the other side of the coin, I'm not justifying what happened. It's certainly not justifying the in-game management where nothing was really done until like the last 5 minutes, and it was again purely just because Laxalt was gassed. If with what happens with the COVID situation and we lose a lot of key players and Lennon goes back to a sort of 4-2-3-1, where again we're... there would still be issues with that because we don't really have, you know, a right winger. You would probably be playing Incham, maybe Turnbull out there. I think that would be criticised as well because that is the system that we've played against them time and again in the last games and been completely overrun in the midfield and just been dominated. And the whole point of 3-5-2 was that you play that. That was the solution that they came up with in Dubai. That was the solution that they played with that won them the league. And that's the system that they've been playing pretty consistently all season. So I almost feel like to take it to its natural conclusion, you have to see it against them to see how it goes. Obviously, in the process of that, halfway through the game, you go, this is not working. Like, this is, take a centre half off, change, do whatever you have to do to change the game tactically. And he didn't do it. But I think that if he'd gone back to just playing the same system that we've played against them and we got beat in the same fashion as, for example, the 29th, people would be up in arms about, why do you play a 3-5-2 since January? And then they finally come to play Rangers and you go back. And in that respect, Lennon is damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. But, and so I would almost defend playing a 3-5-2 with Klamala, with El Yunusi, because that's how we've played this season. We haven't played very well, but this was the system. And if people are talking about how there isn't a plan, that is the plan. It's not a very good plan. We've learned that and we'll see what happens with it. And it's frustrating that we can see that it's not the right plan. But I also think that maybe to take the idea to completion, you have to see it in that kind of game.
But as you say, when you see that it's not working after, you know, 50 minutes, change it.
Yeah.
Kieran?
I just want to say, like, there's... if you're going for personnel over formation. I think there's a way to do it without just doing a 4-2-3-1 to not have a right winger. Like I think Christian put up a tweet where it's the 4-3-2-1, where it's like the Christmas tree formation with two number 10s, which would help in not having to have a right winger. So there's a way around it, and it would help the personnel issue. But I think, and as you say, like I agree with you. Like in a way, he is damned if he does, and damned if he doesn't. But I think the fact that it really underlines that it's not just about formations, this problem. Like, we can tweak formations all we want. This is about coaching. Yeah. These players don't have a clear system in terms of knowing the roles rather than just what positions they're supposed to be on the pitch. It's about knowing the roles in and out of possession, what spaces to move into, who should be, you know, what passing angles to open up. That's not that, you know, formation impacts that, influences it, but it's not at the same level. It's not the same deeper meaning. And I think that's what needing to be worked on now. Like, Celtic could change formation again to like a 3-4-3, or, you know, back to like a 4-2-3-1 or something crazy altogether. I think those issues are still going to remain.
Yeah.
I think it's quite a bleak topic to talk about.
I would tend to agree with you, to be honest, Kieran, that it's whatever way you set them up, if they're not aware of what role they're supposed to play within that system, then the system is irrelevant.
Yeah.
Again, talking about the sort of 4-3-2-1, that's great in that it fits all the sort of right players in the right positions. But then again, you're asking players to go out and play a totally different system. And I say that fully aware of the failings of the current system that they clearly don't understand. But you're asking them to go out and play in a totally different system. And I think you would have proper headless chickens there. I mean, even Laxalt, who was being thrown into that game, having probably only just met the likes of Duffy, Ayer, McGregor, all the internationals that were at El Yunusi, all the players that frustratingly are playing on the same side of the pitch as him, doesn't speak a word of English, and he's been asked to go into this system and this setup. So that's hard enough as it is, let alone we're going to have to pivot from this thing that we've been doing all season. So now nobody knows what's going on. So in that respect, I have every sympathy for Len in regards to the planning that went into this. That it's a perfect storm of things that went wrong in terms of you lose six first-team players. I know not all of them are through COVID, that you're losing Forrest and Julien through injury, but six first-team players, essentially. Six players that, if at any point they're in the team, you're like, aye, that's sure, that's fine. And then on top of that, half the team that's away on internationals and debutants and everything else. So it's not perfect, but it's still not good enough, what we saw. There was still enough. It's still, as we said at the top of the show, it's the lack of fight, it's the lack of desire, it's the lack of heart when it's going badly.
Yeah.
That's what's really worrying.
I think, you know, one of the most incredible things was from the 55th minute onwards, there was no urgency.
None
whatsoever. We were 2-0 down to Rangers at home and there was absolutely no urgency, Kieran.
I just want to ask you, when that second goal went in, did you have any confidence that Celtic would come back?
I looked at Claire and I went, oh, well, that's that done then.
I thought we were going to lose by 3 or 4.
Yeah. There was only one team that looked like it was going to score and it wasn't us. And I mean, we didn't have one shot on target, which I think is unforgivable. I really do. I mean, not one shot on target. We didn't trouble them at all. I want to, regarding the game, I was doing the rundown today, as I mentioned, and what I do is I take the weeks before rundown and I kind of fix it up and then you send it to the guys. And I was looking at the comment I'd left. I left it in the rundown for this week and it was from last week. And the comment is, do we need to look back at the last derby and learn from it? ? I think would be the big answer. That was last week, and it's frustrating. I want to highlight, we're going to talk, okay, go to you.
Well, yeah, I mentioned this on the aftermath yesterday, that what's, again, not to worry the worrisome, but Celtic obviously aren't learning lessons from these games, both in terms of how they apply themselves or how they actually, you know, tactically set up. But yesterday, Saturday at the final whistle, it looked like Gerrard and his players had learned a lesson, because there was no theatrics, there was no indication that they were surprised with the result. They handled it in a really, frustrating to say, but quite a professional manner. And that says to me that they've got a much better mentality this season than they did in previous years. And that, as such, they're probably less likely to have a capitulation, the likes of which we saw in previous seasons. So they're learning lessons. They are getting better on the pitch, and they're clearly getting better off the pitch as well. And so it's particularly frustrating that Celtic aren't learning their lessons. And then just the last thing, when you're talking about looking back, I mentioned this as well, and I would quite like to see maybe if the stats guys could look at it, or from an analytics perspective, the differences between the 3-5-2 that Celtic played from January onwards, up till the league was called, and the 3-5-2 this season, and why is it that it was so much more effective last year than this year? Is it a personnel issue? Is there something that Celtic are doing that slowed the play down so dramatically? What is the difference? Because we're now all sitting here going, well, 3-5-2 doesn't work, but it really did work before. So what's changed? Why are we... what's the difference?
We've all seen that clip of Shane Duffy taking the ball and just knocking it out of...
Just shluing it into row double Z.
Pinging it into row Z. That happened a lot. They're not playing through the 3-5-2 the way they were last season. That's the main difference, I think. And
what is annoying? In the first 10 minutes, Shane Duffy had two really good long balls, like good long through passes. And I was like, oh, aye. He's onto something here. And then he was just like, nope. And just started firing them into the stands.
Crazy. Right, okay. Here's what Neil Lennon had to say. Here's some of his general thoughts on the game.
It looked like what we were, a team put together the day before the game, really. So we've given away two poor goals, you know, and I thought we just defended, you know, their box better than we did. You know, particularly for the second goal, we should have done better. I'm disappointed that we conceded again from a set player, you know. And then we've missed a great chance, you know, Moyes clean through. You know, and the psychology of the game changes. And when you're 2-0 down, then you're really chasing the game. And we've got players who aren't, you know, fully fit, you know, coming on and didn't have the impact that we were hoping they would have. I mean, you look at the players that are missing, you know, your Forrests, your Edwards, Ajeti's not fully fit, Griffiths isn't fully fit. So it looked like...
Aye, sorry. It kind of... Stu.
Neil Lennon has already wasted his... The players don't want to be here. There's not enough passion from the players' speech. We said at the time after Ferencváros that you only get away with doing that once. And so I know that we've talked about how you can't really pay attention to what Lennon says in these things, but he has ready-made excuses there with regards to the players that were missing and the disruption that the team's faced. And I think he's just gone to them. And I don't think that is his appraisal of the game. I hope it's not his appraisal of the game. I'm not sure if it's his appraisal of the game now that I say that. But I think that in terms of public facing, he can't really come out and say what's most disappointing about that game is that none of the players had the fight, because then yet again he's calling into question the character of his players. And
But he could also just say, look, we didn't play well.
Yeah.
Obviously Brendan Rodgers is, you know, none of us are fans of Brendan Rodgers in terms of everything that happened, but I do remember when we lost Ibrox and his post-match reactions and comments were really pretty honest when he went, we weren't good enough, we didn't turn up, collectively we weren't there, and that everyone has, I have to take responsibility for that. That's all Neil Lennon has to say. He just has to say, look, we didn't turn up, but I take full responsibility for that. When he kind of lays these, we've known for a week that there would be no Edward. We've known for a week there'd be no Christie either. Like, this is something we've known about for an amount of time that means that you come up with a different plan.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, man, you're not wrong at all. That he can shield himself with those excuses and then say, but regardless, the bottom line is that wasn't good enough, and that's on me, and we're going to need to look at that. And you're right. And it's just, it compounds the frustration of the fan base having seen such a gutless performance to then see what on the surface is quite a cowardly kind of interview. But I suppose, yeah, all I'm saying is that the alternative to question the player's commitment to it, he's already kind of spunked that one, and it also clearly didn't get a reaction because the performances have been the same ever since.
Yeah.
So it all just adds up to this feeling that there's something else going on behind the scenes. McGregor said in that interview that they have a few things internally to sort out, and whether it's a few bad actors or whether it's, you know, people that Lennon's lost the dressing room, all that sort of thing, something's going on.
Kieran, have you heard anything?
I've heard some stuff that I've been trying to verify. I've not been able to double source it or anything. Just had various people tell me various things, so I don't want to speculate unfairly.
Okay, why don't you do what Charlie Adam does and just randomly suggest something?
Just randomly pick. You've got a wee spinning wheel and you click on it.
What happened was Lennon's opened up the Holy Grail and he's just melted the player's spirits.
Oh, Jesus.
Anthony Ralston's causing dressing room upset.
That sounds like he could be real, so calm down.
he's upset, he's not getting played.
Yeah.
I just on this, I feel like you mentioned it as like he gets this one out of jail free card, but he's got two now with the mole leak. That's the other.
Yeah.
A second get a jail free car. Look, it is the mole thing is an issue. It is an issue, but I just feel like it. I've been looking on Celtic News now, the news aggregation site and everything this morning, and it was a lot of stories were leading with it, and it's like this just really shouldn't deflect attention to it. And I understand from his perspective and Celtic's perspective, it's a nice wee PR hook to try and get attention away from what happened on Saturday. You know, it's quite convenient, but as you say, everything, you know, the big thing, don't trust what Lennon says in the press, but just some accountability, even if it is just a passing, we weren't good, just something would make a world of difference. It doesn't have to be a big 30-second diatribe, just one sentence that says we weren't good enough, we really have a lot to work to do to improve, we're nowhere near where we were last season.
Whenever he brings up Ferencváros, he talks about it like we were magnificent. He talks about it like we absolutely dominated. It's just the lack of accountability. I think you've both summed it up really well. All we're looking for him, he put his hand up and say, look, our standards are really high and we fell away from our standards today. That happens in football sometimes, and we'll make sure that we work twice as hard this week in training. I take full responsibility. Let's move on. That's all he needs to say. Now, it's not going to excuse or absolve him, but what it does do is it makes you realise, okay, he knows there's something wrong. That's fine. He'll be dealing with that. But the way he talks, it's like, there's nothing wrong. It's just shit goes against you sometimes, isn't it? The psychology of the game changes after you concede a goal. What, Kieran?
Yeah, it really makes a big disconnect between the fans and the club, because it makes the club appear that they don't recognise why fans are worried or why fans are upset.
It's gaslighting.
Because there is zero... Yeah, in a way, yeah, because it appears to fans that publicly there's no acknowledgement of that the performances haven't been good enough, and that Saturday was, you know, it was coming. It was to be expected because it was just the logical endpoint of performances so far this season. And just the fact that there's no accountability, just it suggests that, okay, maybe they are doing a lot of work behind the scenes and they do recognise there's big problems behind the scenes, but there needs to be some communication of that with the fans, even if it is just a passing gesture, even if it is one sentence, it needs to be made. Because at the moment, fans are just getting so frustrated and they don't feel like their worries, their concerns are being validated.
Also, just it's such a strange PR move to push ahead with this mole thing, because it just creates this air of chaos and treachery around the club, on top of the fact that, you know, they can say what they want, but the fans know and the pundits know and everyone knows that performance was appalling, and the performances have been very poor. So it's just like throwing, you know, gas on the fire. It's a very strange thing. You'd want to downplay that as much as possible, try and handle it internally.
Here's his comments about the mole.
It's not great, you know, so somebody, you know, within the club is doing us in, basically, and that's disgusting. I think we'll work at it. It's very disappointing. I keep talking about a sense of privacy around our club, but it doesn't seem to be the case with some people. So, yeah, that's very, very disappointing from our point of view.
Yeah, I mean, he's answered it the way you'd expect him to. But as you say, if you do a kind of search for Celtic news, it's very much high on the agenda in a lot of places. Do you think? I mean, joking aside, I mean, it is dangerous. It is bad. It's not absolutely not what you want. But I mean, how much does it add to the? How much does it? With the team news being released, it's not like Rangers are sitting there thinking, "Oh, he's playing. Let's change our system now, eh?" Do you know what I mean? It's
they haven't changed their system at all over the last 3 years, so yeah. They're not going to start now. You could have done a Mourinho and just gone and listed their team or listed exactly how they're going to play and then interchange, you know, player A for player B. Doesn't matter. They're still going to play the same way. And ultimately, Celtic should be good enough to be able to show their hand, be able to say, this is how we're going to play against you and we're going to beat you.
4-0.
But we're not because we're shite.
Yeah. I'll just do the final clip. The final clip is he was asked about, you know, these fixtures and, you know, not deciding the course of the season.
People can make it out to be whatever they want it to be. You know, for me, it's a defeat, and we've got a game in hand. We have to maximise that, win the game, and then just stay in touch and get players fitter, sharper. You know, it's been disruptive with the COVID, and it's been disruptive with a lot of players winning international duty, and I'm not sure some of them are on the ball today, you know, mentally.
Some of them not on the ball mentally. Also, we just need to stay in touch worried me a bit.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Yeah, not a fan. We've got a big week ahead. We've got AC Milan and then we've got Aberdeen. Is this, you mentioned it at the start of the show, Stuart, so I'm going to come to Kieran. How important is this week, Kieran, for Celtic, for 10 in a row and for Neil Lennon?
I think it's massive. It is massive when we go to Toddlers. You know, like as you say, I think the Milan, I'm on two minds with Milan because in a way, this I just wouldn't surprise me if Celtic get like a really dramatic win.
Yeah.
And just because it's the kind of thing that has happened under Neil Lennon when, you know, like when they beat Barcelona, but a few days later drew against St. Johnstone. These things just sort of happen under Neil Lennon Celtic. So I wouldn't be surprised, but I could also see them losing 4-0 and it just really compounding everything. I feel it's a big question because I'm quite wary that even if Celtic do get, if they get a really respectable draw against Milan and they play well and then they beat Aberdeen convincingly, there'll be a lot of people saying Neil Lennon has silenced his critics with that sort of tone. And I feel like he's definitely, in that situation, he would have definitely started to make amends. But those underlying issues will still be there. Like this is a thing where Celtic need to go an extended run of good form now if they want to start making amends, and they need to get at least the point from the next derby.
Yeah,
like if he wants to start making amends, he needs to show that he can actually handle these games, these derbies, because he's just not at the moment. So as you say, it is a massive week, but I feel like I can't see. Personally, this is just my hunch. I don't have any insight. I just can't see Lennon getting sacked until the 10 is basically not possible. Like if it's like 10, 12 points behind in March or something like that, I don't see the club doing it now or over the next couple of weeks, even if results start deteriorating. And that way, and I also think because the league is so important, even if Milan does humiliate Celtic, even if Celtic finish bottom of this group, I don't think that dramatically impacts. I think it impacts the fans' feeling, but I don't think the club internally are viewing that as long as stuff is happening in the league. I don't know what Stuart thinks.
I just think that if there's a deterioration in results in the league over this next stretch of games, because we've got some very tough games domestically, as tough as we've had at any point in this season, And if there's any more drop points, I think that it would be really negligent to not make a change, because that's football. Ultimately, the buck stops with the manager, and if things aren't going well, and if you can't quite put your finger on one individual or one system or one performance, then the likelihood is that it's coming from the manager, and that you have to freshen things up, you have to try and hit a reset button, and you have to do it while there's still time to do it. And just on your point, Gal, that you said, you know, it's such a big season as regards such a big week regarding Europe and 10 in a row, I know that it's an impossible thing. I almost want to stop here and talk about 10 in a row, because to win 10 in a row, you really have to fucking earn it. It's not something that's ever been done, because they don't just hand it out. And just because Celtic have won the league 9 times in a row also doesn't entitle them to just win this one. And at the moment, I don't know if the players are playing with a sense of entitlement that someone's going to pop up and do a thing, or someone's going to have this moment of magic, but they need to collectively fight and work together and earn it, really, really earn it, because it's evident now that they're going to face a real, proper, legitimate challenge, and they're not good enough at the moment. And so you can't talk about 10 in a row, because all implications of 10 in a row, I think it's heavily skewed towards the fact that we're going to do it, or that we expect to do it. Yeah. And I don't think that Celtic fans should currently expect to win 10 in a row, because there's no evidence that that team currently are good enough to do it.
Yeah, I think on Kieran's point and on your point about, you know, Kieran said if we're, you know, 10, 12 points behind in March, or, and you're seeing obviously the pressures of, you know, dropping any more points could be quite unbearable. I don't foresee Neil Lennon being sacked by Celtic this season at all. I foresee if we don't win the league, Peter Lawwell sitting down press conference where he says Neil Lennon started 10 in a row, and we feel he deserved the chance to get 10 in a row, and there's a reason it's never been done before, because it's a blah 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 blah, but we thank Neil for all his things. There's no way Celtic are sacking him before the season's out. Whether he leaves or not is different. I part of me does think. So I think Neil Lennon always thinks he can turn it around. I think every football manager thinks they can, and given enough time, they'll be able to turn everything around. And we're only a point behind now, so I'm not talking about now. I'm talking about if we got to a situation where there was quite a big points gap, Neil Lennon would always think he can turn it around. So I don't really think he'll resign.
He's also a fan, you know. It means an enormous amount to him. And one thing that I don't agree with is that anyone suggesting that it doesn't mean anything to him, because I think it does, and I think he does not look like a well man at all in general, but probably racked with the pressure and importance of what it is that he's having to achieve right now. And I wonder if it did become untenable, or if whatever's happening behind the scenes, if he's lost the dressing room, if he realizes that he's not the man to do it, then for the good of the club, you would hope that he would step down, or it would be a mutual consent sort of situation. But it's just worrying.
Do you know,
there's nothing, no other way to put it.
It's just worrying. Something's got to give, though. One way or the other, something's got to give, and I'm sure we'll see this week. Just final point, Dave Cormack, the Aberdeen guy, talked about the fact that they were, basically, I'm just going to read out his tweets. Supported by Aberdeen City Council, Aberdeen applied for a second test event versus Celtic to include 1,000 fans, just 5% of percent capacity, out in the open fresh air. We got a polite no from Scottish Government stating our first test was a success and latest plan was robust and in excellent shape. Jason Leach told SPFL executives that outdoor events like football were much more palatable than indoor events. Meanwhile, flights are 100% capacity with recycled air and no social distancing. Hundreds of thousands of fans eagerly await club and Scottish Government coming up with a real plan. We plan to share these robust test regulations with the fans later this week. Not one single positive test has emerged from the 300 who tested our first event. We're not asking for carte blanche. These are test events, not a commitment for multiple games. Strong words. Stu?
Just on test events for football and stuff like that. See, in the process of while we've been on here, Wales have announced what they're calling a fire break, different terminology, quite dramatic, I think. Chill out, Wales.
Calm down.
A lockdown of 2 weeks starting at 6 p.m. on Friday, where people must stay home, all hospitalities closed, secondary schools closed for years 9 and above. Our critical care units are already full, warns the First Minister. So that's really drastic action and really telling statistics from a country like Wales, you have to imagine that it's the sort of thing that will embolden or put pressure on England maybe to put in similar sort of restrictions while they've got the chance with the school holidays. And I think it's evident why, you know, hospitality and stuff's been shut down up here. It could get worse up here in terms of the lockdown and restrictions, depending on what happens with regards to financial support at a government level. But I just think that ultimately it's not really the time to be trying to push more people into open air venues when everything's, you can see on the horizon, is going to come to a halt.
Kieran, final thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I'm quite similar to Stu. I just feel, not irresponsible is the wrong word, because obviously he's just wanting the best for his club and for his game. And he makes, like, his actual words, I don't disagree with one of them. I think that it's, you know, it's well, clearly well thought through. It's definitely the way forward for when it's achievable or when it's something to go through. There's a bigger conversation to have about whether, you know, the Scottish government hates football fans to the extent that they're just not willing to realise how logical and rational the plan is. But similar to Stu, it just feels like with everything coming down to a steeper lockdown, and, you know, who knows what will be introduced, you know, in 2 weeks' time or next week in Scotland as well. Like, whether there's stricter measures or whether they keep things as they are. It's a bit worrying, but at the same time, he's just looking after his club's best interests. He wants Aberdeen and Scottish football to flourish again, and, you know, fair play to him. And I think as I say, like, it's probably the best point, the best plan of action that all clubs should look to replicate. I think it's a really smart and well thought through plan. What was yours, Chris?
Very similar. Yeah, Celtic are really pushing for fans. That survey, McGregor mentioned it in that interview that Stuart's talking about, where he basically says we can't wait to get our fans back. It's been pushed very hard by Celtic on all fronts. So I don't know. It's just, you know, we are where we are. So
I think Christian's been banging the drum about it, and it's actually a really good point that, I mean, no one would like to get back into football stadiums more than us. Of course we would, done safely, of course. But Christian was saying that the time for, it's not really an appropriate time to be pushing for more people to be out and about. And really the time should be maybe better spent, or the energy could be better spent to get financial support to keep, make sure that clubs can survive.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be feasible when a society in general is told to lock down. Not only is it not feasible then to get fans back in a progressive way, but, you know, we're going backwards, and that's more indicative of the fact that it's going to be even longer until you can get these progressive plans through, and that some clubs won't survive. So
yeah,
maybe focus on the financial side of things.
Claire went to see Celtic FC Women yesterday. Unfortunately, they were defeated by Glasgow City, but she was in Broadwood. She was in the stadium. She watched a live football match. I asked her what it was like, and she said it was weird. She said it was just really weird. Kieran, you've experienced it yourself. It's just a bit, just really odd.
Yeah, it's pretty surreal at first, but I have to say, like, after it's like what it was with watching football on TV at that, like, the third or fourth time. It's bizarre how quickly you get used to it. It's just something, like, it becomes part of it that you just. You hear Brown shouting and no one else. That's the football experience now. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the player goes to the next game and she doesn't notice it at first, because it's just like so much else of this pandemic. We've just got so used to just wearing a mask in every store. It's just a force of habit now. It's amazing how quickly you adapt.
I thought it was really respectful of Moyle and Yussi to socially distant, stay socially distant from Conor Goldson. That was good of him, eh?
Good.
That's a dad joke for you there.
Dad joke. Right, listen, that's the agenda for this week. Got a lot of stuff coming up on The Cynic.
Do you know what makes me tick, Christopher? It's Celtic, but do you know what also makes me sick? It's Celtic.
Yes, absolutely. We're not doing what makes me tick sick this week, because I'm just not...
Not in the mid. I'm frankly not in the mid. I don't care what you have for your breakfast.
Yeah. I was going to say who it was there. I almost said, but
I know who it is because you put, left their name in the rundown last week. I was quite annoyed about that. So lift it, mate. Lift it.
Stuart Dugan, pleasure as always.
Thanks, I guess. Thanks.
Kieran Devlin, we'll speak to you next week.
Pleasure as all, mate.
I'm Chris Gallagher, and this has been The Agenda.